Rustin is over, but we are just getting started here on The Connect on Post Show Recaps. It's me, Chappelle, and I'm back again for another one of these Connect movie reviews. And this time, we are in for a very special treat. I think these last few films have had one thing in common, and that is a little trophy known as the Oscar. And so to continue our Academy Award-winning coverage here on The Connect, we are going to be talking about Rustin and Coleman Domingo's Oscar-nominated performance that we are about to dive into here on The Connect. So with me, as usual, Mari, what's up?
Hello. I'm so glad we've been able to watch and talk about these very blacky black Oscar Academy Award nominated films. We did not, the nominations were not out when we did Color Purple. So Danielle Brooks did get a nom for Best Supporting Actress. The noms weren't out last week when we did American Fiction, but let's go. Jeffrey Wright got nominated for Best Actor, while Sterling K. Brown got nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Tell us we have taste without telling us we have taste, right?
That part. And of course, you know, someone who helped us come up with this playlist as well of Oscar nominated movies. I want to say our Oscar expert here. Right. LaTanya, you back? What's up?
I'm back. I had a lot of fun talking about our Black Oscar nominees on our Oscars podcast. And I'm excited that we get the chance to talk about Rustin today.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so once again, thank you all for joining us here on The Connect on Post Show Recaps. We've been having a great time talking about these movies and just really diving into some of the heavily lauded and prestige works from these Black actors and directors and producers, all this other stuff, because a lot of times we do not see these things highlighted on the larger scale. We've seen hashtags in the past, Oscar's so white, where you have to really remind people that there are other actors of other race, on The Connect specifically here Black, but and other races and ethnicities that do matter and that do have voices and talent that don't get showcased as much due to, not being a part of the majority or the larger voting audience, or even not doing things that are comfortable for people who are not, part of those communities to watch. And so here we have Tell Us All This Time. We got a civil rights movie, it's kind of back to the well on this one. And so before we get into the movie review as a whole, Mari, what did you think about, the idea that, okay, we got another civil rights movie, it's Oscar nominated. Mm-hmm. Have we done this too many times before, or is this something we need to keep going back to?
No, I don't think we've done it too many times before when you're looking at also American Fiction being nominated as well, and that's neither your slave movie, your civil rights movie, or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? My inherent problem with civil rights movies or slave movies is not the genre itself. It's that they make up the majority of Black media. Now that we're getting more diverse Black stories, even though we could always use more, but now that we are getting more diverse Black stories, it's okay, it's here for everybody, and it's a purpose to kind of teach that history so that it doesn't get erased. So I'm cool with it. I'm fine.
Yeah, and I'd argue that this is probably a spin on a civil rights movie that we haven't really seen a lot of as well. We've seen a lot of movies told about the civil rights movement from Martin Luther King's perspective and the perspective of the man, the face of the movement. We've seen MLK and we've seen Malcolm X as well, kind of hoist it to the front of these stories. But I think that Rustin does a really good job of, one, telling the story of one main character, but also highlighting that there are so many other voices involved in the civil rights movement in a way that we haven't really seen before. LaTanya, what did you think about Rustin as a part of that story and being a new person at the front of this movement as far as the larger media is concerned?
I thought that it's really important that this movie got made, just because I think that the larger public may never have heard of Bayard Rustin before. He is one of those names, when you look at pictures of the March on Washington, you can clearly see him in the photos in the background after, King has given his I Have a Dream speech, or even during. But you may not know who he is or what role that he had played in actually organizing the March on Washington itself. So the fact that it's kind of a story that's been lost to history almost gives it even more relevance as to why it's something that should be told. And also it's a story about a queer Black man who's openly queer during the 1940s, 50s, 60s, which is something that you don't hear about very often. And often, you know, those people get pushed to the margins as a result of that.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think that is largely why this movie has gotten so much buzz, is that it was a twist on a civil rights story, because it's telling the story of the Black civil rights movement. But as we know, women and queer people have been at, you know, pulling the strings on those movements and not getting the recognition that they've deserved for so, so long. And so here in this movie, we do get the story of Byatt Rustin, and I'm very proud to say my frat brother Byatt Rustin, fraternity. Yeah, so I was like, okay, and we get the Academy Award nomination for Coleman Domingo, and so I love Coleman Domingo. Talk about him all the time on The Walking Dead. Latanya, I know you're a big Coleman Domingo fan too. What did you think about Coleman Domingo in this role as the titular Byatt Rustin?
Yeah, I thought that he did a really great job of just kind of like bringing in a sense of humanity to the part. Like Coleman Domingo, as I've said before, is like one of our generation's great actors. Like he's soon going to be playing Michael Jackson's father. Like he played Mister. He's going to play every single terrible father that has ever existed in the Black canon. And I'm fine with it. I think that, you know, in this performance, there was just so much heart there. There's a lot of range, like when people talk about award, like Academy Award nominated performances, you know, he is like playing the lute at some point during this. He's like singing. He's, you know, he's acting his ass off. And it's not like he's getting an award for the most acting either, which is something that especially in biopics can happen. So I just think that his performance in this movie is so great and something that is to be seen. And it should be said also that Coleman Domingo is Afro-Latino, which is, you know, like when they were congratulating the Latino nominees, they didn't put him on there. And so it's important to like note that he's in the intersection of all of these different things. He's Afro-Latino and he's LGBTQ+, and he's given this amazing performance. I'm just glad that we're living in the era of Coleman Domingo.
Can I just piggyback on that and saying like this, like Oscar nomination, like reveal thing has just been like one F up after another. it's like they've been focusing like on the wrong things. It's like Barbie didn't get nominated. Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig didn't get nominated for Barbie, but America Ferrera did, you know. She's like a Latino woman who got the best supporting nomination. Oh, but shout out to America Ferrera, and I forgot the other actress, our Latino noms this year. What about Coleman Domingo? What about Coleman Domingo? I forgot him. Like, it was just so, it's just like, I don't, it's like the left eating each other. Like, what are we doing here, y'all? Like, not to mention, like, Greta and Robbie and Margot Robbie don't get those nominations, but then we get, like, don't we get, like, our, like, one of, like, not that many indigenous women being nommed. I think in the best director there's like a Black woman or something nommed there or something like that.
Justine Triet is a nominee from France.
So there is a woman nominee in that category. It's just not Greta Gerwig. What are we all doing here?
Yeah. Ryan Gosling gets nominated for the Barbie movie because he's just Ken.
Ken gets nominated for best supporting, and it's just like,
and it's not even like Greta and Margot don't get nominated for Oscars, because they do, because it's nominated for best picture and it's nominated for best adapted screenplay. Yeah, so they are up for Oscars.
Yeah, just not the two that,
just not the ones you want.
Yeah. But all that to be said, like, it's like people can now start to think like the Oscars, oh, they're just nominating people just to fill diversity quotas and stuff like that. You can definitely see people leaning towards that way. But if you watch this movie, you'll rightfully know why Colman Domingo got that Oscar nom. He is so dynamic in this role as a Bayard Rustin. It's like, again, he just falls into the character. I'm not even realizing I'm watching Colman Domingo while I'm watching him, which I think is like number one. And then like him affecting the affectation, you know, they say it's pure Oscar bait when you can put on an accent, you know, and kind of look messed up. He had the good makeup with the missing tooth and stuff like that. But just playing this eccentric role, is it wasn't just that. It were so many levels to Colman's portrayal of Bayard that were just really stunning. From like almost like his, I don't want to say, but like manic modes of like getting into organizing the rally and all of that, to like his down moments when he's facing like how his personal life can affect his professional life and stuff like that. Colman gave so many levels of emotion while still being in this character that it was truly a masterclass to see. So even if you're not interested in the subject matter, like if you're not a history person or anything like that, his acting truly like drags you through the movie. Like it's the one thing that keeps you like engaged through the movie. At least that's how I found. That's what I found. What did you think, Chappelle?
Oh yeah, big agree. Like I said, I'm a big Colman Domingo fan. And so watching him in this role, yeah, this felt like my first introduction to Bayard Rustin. Even though I've read about him, you know, this is the first time I get to see, like, you know, what he would look like in these moments. Mm-hmm. And this was a very fun watch and, you know, a very important story to tell. So what we'll do is we'll go ahead and take a ad break right now, and then we'll come back in just a moment to talk about the movie, our final parts, and get into, you know, the bigger story right after this. Okay, so we're back. Bayard Rustin, this is the story of a civil rights leader, obviously, like you said, played by Colman Domingo. He's depicting a very important person in the civil rights movement because he stands for civil rights for all people, right? For gay rights, African-American rights, men's, women's rights for all people. Well, that's largely not the story we're taught when we're taught about the civil rights movement in school in the past. We are taught mm-hmm. that like Martin Luther King led this march on Washington and it happened. Everybody just showed up. And because got on the mic and told everybody to come. And that's it. You know, I don't think I've ever really heard the story of like the grassroots portion of these things and like the feet on the ground of how it takes, like how much it takes to organize this and how much it takes to get hundreds of thousands of people in one spot, right? Not just a thousand people, but hundreds of thousands. And we get to see that from beginning to end told through the eyes of Bayard Rustin. And I'll just say this, starting the movie off with Bayard Rustin and MLK working closely together and then showing that they are driven apart by rumors of, you know, Bayard Rustin and MLK having like homosexual activity between the two of them, you know, that was probably perpetuated by anybody who could want to shut down this movement, whether it's black, white, brown, whoever. If you don't want this person, Bayard Rustin, to be the face of this movement, the best way to shut it down is to attack his sexuality. And it does put a rift between him and MLK that they later have to like come back together and fix so that they can get the March on Washington, which is the biggest demonstration we'll ever see in civil rights in the United States, to happen. And to think that it almost doesn't happen because Bayard Rustin is a homosexual. And Mari, I know you probably have a lot of opinions on this for sure, but when you look at this story and knowing that this almost doesn't happen, like this huge movement, the rights that we know today almost didn't happen because a man is gay. What do you think about how the movie shows that and how the movie kind of bookends it with Bayard Rustin at the end, not even really getting the credit that he deserved for making this happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising. It's like back then, everybody was coming for them. The FBI, you know what I'm saying? Like they don't. The powers that be did not want equal rights, you know, they didn't want civil rights, civil liberty for black people and all people and stuff like that. So they see it as a quick out. Like this is stuff that they're still doing to this day. They're trying to divide these communities. They're trying to divide the LGBTQ queer community from the black community as if there are not people who overlap in both of those communities. You know what I'm saying? It's a tale as old as time. You divide and you conquer. You know what I'm saying? So seeing Bayard Rustin like truly being the boots on the ground and truly like being the person that gets MLK on the stage, but the fact that they can use this one thing against him, which is his homosexuality, which at the time was not like permitted or legal or seen as morally right, is it's not surprising to me. It's like the same playbook. We're seeing the same playbook over and over and over again. It's like you divide the minorities so that they can't speak up against the majorities who are the actual oppressors. So I really liked that we do get that they stick beside him eventually. You know, we find out that they stick beside him and he's able to continue his work when it could have been so easily they just toss him aside, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And throughout, we see that weaponized against him several other times throughout the film. Basically, anytime there's some momentum, they try to throw something at these civil rights leaders. And we see that in the stories of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King as well, where it's mm-hmm. like, oh, we have to diminish their act, you know, their actions and their civil rights leadership by, you know, like being like, oh, you know, he got a white girlfriend on the side, you know, or like, oh, you know, well, did you hear about this? Did you hear about that? And they come out the gate swinging with, oh, yeah, MLK and by Rustin. Isn't it crazy that this reverend is so good friends with this gay man? What could be going on there? Latanya, they even accused by Rustin of being a communist. And when they do, the phones start ringing. But when they say that, oh, he's a pervert. Remember what happened in Pasadena? The phones are blowing up and he's almost asked to resign. I'm sure you have a lot to say about that. When it comes to Bayard Rustin and Coleman Domingo, I guess specifically, what did you think about those moments where he was faced with, I have a very important thing to say and I know I'm right, but we have these external factors that are not just allowing me to not only be myself but also to get us to the greater good?
Yeah, there's that really great scene where they're in the kind of like boardroom area and they're meeting with all of the people who are coming in from out of town who want to know more about the progress that they made on the march. And that is when Jeffrey Wright's character Adam Clayton
popping up again.
Yeah. Look at him. He's in this movie too. Where he wants to expose what happened in Pasadena. And instead, Rustin tries to get them to focus on, like, we have this many buses, we have this many people cooking, we have this many like toilets, et cetera, et cetera. Like, look at all the work that we managed to do in like 6 or 7 weeks to make this happen. Like, it's not that he's deflecting, it's that he's trying to change the focus from himself to the movement as a whole. And that is something that takes just a tremendous amount of like inner strength. You can tell that like he is petrified of these stories getting out about him. Like, I think Coleman Domingo does a great job of playing that fear that you would have of being exposed at a time like that, of having like the worst things, quote unquote, worst things about you aired out in public in front of people that you care about and that you trust, that are your colleagues. Like, this is work, right? Like, so it is just almost gut-wrenching to see his portrayal as he deals with all of these different issues that are trying to detract from what he's the great work that he's doing for the civil rights movement. And that it's coming, like the call is coming from inside the house is what makes it terrible.
Yeah, and we will get to that for sure, because I got a lot of questions for the NAACP at this point. But but yeah, it's so crazy because, of course, obviously he doesn't want his character defamed for being himself, right? For doing things that, you know, that is natural to him. He says, you know, I was born Black and I was born homosexual at the same exact time, you know? So it's like, it's not like I changed up or something happened and made me act like this and I was acting out. This is just him, you know, trying to find love and affection in the places that he can find it. And he's being like basically painted as a criminal. I mean, they literally said persecuted of being a homosexual. And to have all of that, just trying to protect your character, but then also knowing that that part of you could derail this entire movement. You know, like you could come back to work tomorrow and they say, you are no longer involved. We're not doing 100,000 people. We're actually doing 10,000 people. It's going to be a picnic. There are not going to be any tents. There's not going to be any water. They're not going to, you know, and knowing again that this might be coming from the FBI, but it also could be coming from the NAACP. It could be coming from Martin Luther King. You don't know who it's coming from. You don't really know who to trust except for your closest inner circle of people. And even they might throw you under the bus if it means keeping the meeting going. That scene with Jeffrey Wright was incredible because I was just talking about how much I love Jeffrey Wright last time we talked, y'all.
Yeah,
I don't know how I feel about Jeffrey Wright anymore. God, defend him.
I don't know if he's my God, but he's a damn good actor. Like, he is really good at making you hate him in this role. And like, Adam Clayton Powell is like one of the like big civil rights figures that we actually do learn about in school. Or like in your individual reading, he's one of the bigger names is what I'm trying to say. So to know that he was doing all this, or at least like the movie is portraying that he was doing all this, Jeffrey Wright, we need to have a discussion, I think. Like, I applaud you for playing this role so well, but I hate it when you play people that I don't like. It doesn't sit right with me.
That part. Go ahead, Mari.
And it also felt like the old guard versus the new guard. It's like, and I'm pretty sure we could all relate to that. It was like Powell wanted he wanted to be in the spotlight. He wanted to push this. And the fact that he like constantly is the thorn in Byard's side, and talk about other people throwing Byard's sexuality up. Powell says that every chance we get, the first time we meet him, he's calling him a queen. Like,
yeah,
you know, Powell is very power hungry, it feels like, for somebody who is a representative in Congress and stuff like that. And this character is like, are you the villain? Like, you're kind of the villain here, but no, you're not, because the white man is the villain. The FBI, right. they're the real villain. Like, you know, so. I did like him. And then at the end, kind of like him trying to eat crow to like, please let me speak at this, at the March on Washington. But they're trying to figure out, they don't want it to be political. They want it to be a peace rally. So I don't even know. Was it clear? Did he get to speak at all? Do we know?
I do not believe that he did.
No. I don't think so. Right. Yeah. He just really wanted in on this because by the time the ball was rolling, they could tell that it was going to be bigger than they anticipated, and it was.
Since we're talking about the cast, I do not want to glance over the performance of Amel Amin as Martin Luther King. I am not familiar with this man's work at all.
Not at all.
I am so used to my Martin Luther Kings being the same exact person every time. You know, like, it's very like slow talking, talks like he's always giving the I Have a Dream speech at any given time. But this was new. This felt like young Martin, you know, like like little Martin. I am not familiar with Amel Amin, but Mari, have you ever seen him in any other works? Because I've seen some of these things, but nothing that makes me stand out.
Yeah,
this might be my new Martin Luther King.
Wow, no, I'm looking at his IMDb, and he was Albie in the Maze Runner. Maze Runner was one of my favorite books. The movies were okay. He plays the only black character in it, and he did a good job. And he was in I May Destroy You.
Yeah, that's what I know him from.
Yeah, if that means, I think that means that's Michaela Cole's best friend character, right? Wow. Is that not
Papa Seydoux? I think was the best friend character. I'm not sure exactly which character he played. In I May Destroy.
Yeah, and I May Destroy. Okay, because I was about to say, then he really like transported. So yeah, he's in like a lot of stuff that I did just watch. Run, Sweetheart, Run. But I wouldn't have been able to pick him out. I couldn't tell. And I think he did a really good job as young Martin. That's what it felt like, right? It felt like young Martin. Like you said, it felt like somebody who wasn't as necessarily sure of himself as you would think. You know, somebody who is, I mean, this is an event planning kind of 101. Like, if you like event planning, this is like the movie for you.
Yes.
And I'm really not surprised. Like, why would I think that Martin Luther King would know like how to event plan all of this? You know, like, I think protesting the Montgomery bus stops is easier than trying to get 250,000 people into one area. You know, so I liked it. I did like his portrayal. Definitely a different, I felt like a different take on Martin Luther King altogether.
Yeah, I know him from Sense8. He was the African bus driver, Kefius, I think his name was. In Sense8. And wow. I didn't even recognize him, right?
Right, so, didn't recognize him at all.
Yeah, he's a British actor, too.
Yeah.
You know, these British folk love playing UK and civil rights leaders. Maybe that's a different podcast. Never mind. I'm just saying it be happening a lot these days. That's it.
But he's in so much stuff. Like
he's in a lot of stuff.
Red Tails too. Oh my gosh,
it's crazy.
He's in Red Tails.
He's in Red Tails. Yeah,
it feels like
and the Butler.
For like him to step out into like more leading roles, because I think these a lot of the roles we're talking about, he's like a supporting cast member. But if you can play MLK in any capacity, I think that you kind of got it. You know, you can move forward. And I think he's a seasoned actor at this point. You know, it's like to us, we were like, "What? That's him?" But you know, when you go look at his IMDb, he's like, "No, we know him. We just weren't familiar with his work." This cast is full of really big names. LaTanya, was there any other name that's jumped out to you immediately? I don't want to get into the Chris Rock of it all unless you do.
Yeah.
I was hoping that we could have a Chris Rock free podcast. Oh, God. No, for me, a few stand out. Glenn Turman playing A. Philip Randolph. Like, Glenn Turman has been on my screen in one capacity or another since my born day. Like, I love him as an actor. This is the type of role that, you know, like white actors are rewarded for as kind of like a Lifetime Achievement Oscar nomination. So I could have easily seen him getting some awards recognition there. And then I have to point out the ladies, CCH Pounder as Dr. Henchman and Audra McDonald as Ella Baker. These are two women that I don't remember seeing screen portrayals of before.
We actually get screen portrayals of women in the civil rights movement that don't get that recognition, and it's a main focal point. They're talking about how women don't feel included in this march and all of that. I mean, just getting portrayals of these civil rights leaders, of all these behind the scene ones, like for people who don't know, it's amazing. I love that. I love being like, oh, now I gotta go look this person up. Look this person up.
And then we got the briefest of snippets of Davine Joy Randolph, who is also an Academy Award nominee this year for The Holdovers, an excellent performance in that movie if you haven't seen it. And she's playing Mahalia Jackson for like 3 seconds, but still, like, her presence on the screen is just, it just comes through.
Yeah, definitely necessary too, because you cannot tell the story of MLK without at least name dropping Mahalia Jackson at least one time.
But her music was all over this movie. Like every time they press a record player is Mahalia Jackson. Like I watched with the captions on. I was like, they love him some Mahalia.
They love Mahalia.
Look, she deserves. Ella Baker. You were talking about Audra McDonald as Ella Baker. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, because it happens very early in the film, but she is the one who tells Ben Rustin, "Hey, why don't you go back and talk to MLK? You need to go make up with your friend." And that moment is so pivotal, because we don't get any of this without this woman saying, "Stop it. Stop it. Yeah your feelings are hurt, but this is bigger than you. This is bigger than y'all. This is bigger than you. You need to go make up with him, because he's not about to. He's about to move forward and try to do this the best way he can, but he needs you. He needs your abilities as an organizer, and he needs your skill set. And honestly, y'all work better together." I think she said, "Separate y'all are fine, but together y'all are fire." And that's exactly what they needed. I was like, that was kind of a bar, but okay, go with it. I think that throughout...
Sorry, I was going to say that and the death of Medgar Evers here as well.
Yeah. When it comes to Ella Baker and when it comes to the portrayal of Dr. Anna Hedgman from CCH Powder, that those are the moments, right, that are understated, right? The moments where a woman is saying, "Go do the thing. Go do this thing, and then it'll happen." And then the men go and they do it, and then the men get all the glory and the praise for it. Because throughout... and I really want to talk about CCH Powder, because I mean, it's like I've known this woman, she's like, so you said, good. My whole life.
Gosh.
The first time I laid eyes on the television screen, I feel like I've known her, and I was so excited to see her in this role. But throughout, she's beating the drum. I was just like, you know, we have to give women a voice in this. It's not the movement if women aren't going to be seen. What's the difference? what's the importance of being seen and not heard? Why would you want that if we're being so intricate and integral inside of creating this whole movement? And I just thought that was so cool that you could use this story by Rustin to show that, you know, there were other aspects of the civil rights movement other than just MLK showing up, you know, and just making everything just happen. You know, these stories have been told, but never, like you said, on screen portrayal that really highlighted some of the finer aspects of them and their careers. And so I really appreciated that. But yes, Mari, you highlighted Medgar Evers, who is in this film for a very short time. Mm-hmm. And that moment being one of the inciting incidents that really pushes the March on Washington to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like the voice of reason within the room. Like, we need to make this work. We need to all come together to make it happen. He speaks up for Bayard Rustin. And it's kind of funny because it's like, as soon as they say it, I was like, oh, I know who that is. You know what I'm saying? In a room, yeah. Like, I'm like, oh God, I don't know exactly who everybody here is, but like to see that. And I was like, oh wait, are they gonna? And I was like, oh yeah. I was like, oh damn. Like, yeah, they have to include it because his death is so pivotal to the civil rights movement and really bolstering the civil rights movement to move forward. That it was, you know, it was bittersweet to see him in this moment playing peacekeeper to then his death being what his death and Ella Baker's prodding is what kind of brings Bayard and MLK back together.
Yeah. Another person.
That's my thought, at least.
I mean, that's what it looked like to me as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another portrayal in this movie that I was very happy to see. I got very excited when they were all in the room, because like you said, until they tell you who these people are, like these are actors. So we don't
see
the face of who we're talking about. But John Lewis is in this movie. And I was like, hey! So, Matanya, he's played by Maxwell Whittington Cooper.
Uh-huh.
I do not know this man. I've seen When They See Us. I believe he was in that. He's in The Godfather of Harlem and Mrs. Fletcher. Are you familiar with him? And what did you think about his portrayal and his brief portrayal of John Lewis?
I'm not really familiar with him, no. He's clearly a young and like up and coming actor. So mm-hmm. I think this was like one of his bigger roles so far.
Yeah.
I just like found myself drawn to his eyes. Like he just is such has such an expressive face. And for him to be playing someone as amazing as, you know, John Lewis, like somebody that we all know and like love and are familiar with like the sights and sounds and mannerisms of, he's doing such a great job at playing like a young, eager, like scrappy John Lewis, as opposed to like the more statesmanly type person mm-hmm. that we know when he's older. And I think mm-hmm. this performance is just like spot on. Like, this movie's casting is was done by Abbie Kaufman, who has casted like a million Oscar nominated and winning roles. Like, she's an amazing casting director. But the casting in this movie is just something that I marvel at. Like, just looking at this row of names, and there's a lot of people here that we aren't necessarily familiar with that aren't household names yet, that I think because of this movie will become household names. And I think that this actor, Maxwell Whittington Cooper, is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Definitely. His portrayal was amazing. Yeah.
I was like, am I the only one who doesn't know who this is? I mean, I went and looked for like a Wikipedia page and I didn't find mm-hmm. one. So I was like, okay, maybe they're a relative new actor, but very excited. Again, these names that they're portraying are such big names in the history of the United States, especially when it comes to Black history. And so I was mm-hmm. like, if you now have that under your belt, then you can do anything. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You played John Lewis in a movie. Okay, so now what do you want to do? You know, where do you want to go? What role is too big for you? You know, if you played MLK in a movie, what role is too big for you now? Exactly. You know? Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited to see. But there were so many like relative unknowns for me. Kara Patterson, who's known for Straight Outta Compton, played Coretta Scott King. Who knew? I had no clue. I was like, okay, you know. And so now I'm thinking, okay, now I gotta really dive deep. But I do think that the Connect on post-show recaps, this is what we do. We are supposed to go and find these people and talk about how great they did, because a lot of ways they'll be overlooked. Coleman Domingo is a mega star, always has been in my eyes, and is finally getting his just due, but look how long it took. And so these people are kind of in their like early stages, if not early stages of getting recognition. And so we might have years and years to come to talk about the performances from these actors. So we might be at the ground floor of some of the biggest careers of our lifetime. We just don't know yet. But with that, let's take another break. And then after that, we'll come back and talk about a little bit, few more of the plot points, and then wrap everything up on this recap right after this. Okay, so we got into the bigger named characters in the cast, but we really haven't talked about the romance, which is kind of a center point of this film as well, between Byatt Rustin and Elias, played by Johnny Ramey. So this character, I found out, was created for the film.
That kind of had that feeling.
So like, I mean, because even if you think about it, it would take like probably an act of God in Congress and all kinds of stuff to get somebody to openly talk about a clandestine relationship in the civil rights movement between civil rights leaders, you know, like that, a married man and stuff. There's a lot of reasons why this story is probably not being told, but there's probably reason to believe that there is a story similar to it like that, like that's out there, right? So they create this character Elias to show that Byatt Rustin, being a man who is openly homosexual, it seems, but you know, is attracted to other men who might not be openly homosexual, can have you know, a relationship outside of this movement that could be detrimental to making this movement happen. And so there's a point in the film where he's telling his other partner Tom, who we'll talk about as well, that just don't let me get into trouble. I can't, you know, I can't throw this off. He tells MLK, I can only be who I am, but I'm going to try to make sure there are no incidences. And basically, he don't want to get caught being gay outside, you know? And I thought that was so entertaining of like a way to put that, but also, you know, so sad. And so we see Elias and Byatt Rustin in this romance where they start off as, they're both in the movement, but eventually, you know, this man is in, you know, the church ministry and he's married, and Byatt Rustin really can't be getting caught up gay outside right now because it'll be bad for the movement. And eventually they're broken up. Latanya, what did you think about this love story in this little bubble? Because Byatt Rustin seemingly had a few love stories going on at once.
He did. I mean, he has the love story with Tom that is like an actual, like factual love story. And then this love story with Elias Taylor, who is really just like, you know, trying to come out of his shell when he's around Byatt. Like, he is so
closeted.
Closeted, yeah. And has to be like working in the church in Alabama. Being married, and like, you know, we learn that he has a baby on the way by the end of the movie. Like, you know, he necessarily would have to be closeted during this time, even though Byatt like finds the ability to be free. I love the conversation that they have at the bar where, you know, you get the idea that this is like, this turns into a gay bar at night. Because Rustin says, we're okay here now at this time of night. And then you look around and it's just all men just like hanging out with each other. And that's something that I'm sure Elias never experienced before, just being like in a place like that. And he says they're discussing respectability politics and what it means to be Black and gay and growing up Christian and all of those conversations that are just so in the subtext of most movies. It are laid bare in this movie. And I think that that's very important. And then we get the line from Elias, you know, teach me how to be brave right before they kiss, which is a very sweet line. And it's just sad to see what eventually happens of their relationship later on in the movie.
Yeah, because it's so realistic. It's realistic for that time period. It's realistic for Elias's position, because not only is he in the church, but he's like, in church leadership, and we find out later that with he's married to the current pastor's daughter. So when the current pastor steps down, he's gonna give the congregation to Elias. So Elias is like number two here. So he has so many things to lose. And unfortunately, this was their reality for, I'm pretty sure, a lot of gay men during that time, Black gay men, Christian gay men during that time. So I like it for its authenticity, but you could definitely tell that this was probably, this was like something they threw in to maybe give a little bit more of a dynamic character to Bayard, but to also, again, flesh out how the times are going. So I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, they definitely need to give a lot more. You have to take license to do some of this stuff, because otherwise you don't get the full picture of who Bayard Rustin is, right? If he's closeted, then people don't know those sides of him unless he's talking about them with people. And then it just becomes secondhand accounts of what happened. And so this is the only way you get to see what it looks like when he is sneaking out in the middle of the night and then almost attempt like going to meet him, but then, you know, getting scared and going back, because what if somebody sees him? Or, you know, they pull up at the club at the night and there's a raid and all these people are getting, you know, there's flash photography on all these men as they're getting shuffled out of the club. And that could have been the end of both their livelihoods, you know, by arresting, derailing the civil rights movement in that moment, potentially. And Elias and his entire life crumbling because he's a married man with kids during this time. And so, yeah, all of that kind of has to be included in the film so that you can see, you know, the realities of what it was for somebody like him, you know, and this relationship that they had. Now, Elias was portrayed by Johnny Ramey, who, again, for me, relative unknown. I see that he's been in several Broadway and major regional productions. But again, if you are basically playing the other leading man to Bayard Rustin, right? Like Bayard Rustin's like love interest in this movie, I feel like the sky's the limit. You know, this is Coleman Domingo playing off of you as an Oscar nominated actor. Now, when you go apply and you go and audition for your next film, you got something to put on your plate. They say like, bam, look what I did. And so I'm thinking that there's probably good things and big things to come for him as well. LaTanya, you mentioned Tom. Now, you said Tom is actual portrayal of somebody that was a real life love interest for Bayard Rustin.
Tom Kahn, I believe who is essentially like the secretary for Rustin throughout this movie. But they also clearly have like a romantic relationship. They're basically living together. And I believe that he was the lover that stayed with Rustin throughout the rest of his life, if I'm not mistaken. So
I believe in the credits, right before the credits, they did say he found another love interest eventually. Yeah. But I don't know. But it looks like Tom was probably the love interest that was at this part of this civil rights movement part of his life, right? Where he's creating this march on Washington. But LaTanya, if it's anything like the movie portrayed it, I'm not surprised that they did not last that long.
There's like a power imbalance that's happening in addition to the fact that, you know, Rustin is almost portrayed as, you know, like the type of person who gets really interested in someone and like taken by them and then has the possibility to move on once he finds the next person that he's interested with and taken by. That's at least how Tom puts it in the movie. So with all of the combination of the power imbalance, the trying to make it together through the civil rights movement, like being a white man with a black man, like all of those are reasons why their relationship would not necessarily have lasted. And there are a million more.
Yeah. Speaking of power dynamics, LaTanya, if you think about it, isn't it weird to be like, Tom is the minority in this film and in this circle, to where if there's a power dynamic, it's not because Tom is a white man and he has more power over Bayard Rustin. It's actually the other way around.
It's flipped.
Yeah, he's essentially his white paramour. And so he's just like, he drags him around to these functions. And, you know, and Tom is very active. He went to Howard. Shout out to Mari. He went to Howard, but apparently
my alma mater.
Apparently in his life, his family was not okay with him being gay and having a black man at their table, a black teenager at their lunch table. Their dinner table. And so he left, and he's seemingly been active in the civil rights movement ever since. Yeah, I thought Tom was very interesting because, you know, he does feel like the story that we're told about a lot of civil rights leaders is that they did have white counterparts that were actively doing the work for them, for better or for worse, you know. So Tom...
work with them.
Yeah, work with them. Yeah. Cat's pawing them sometimes, you know. Because in this film, it is very much portrayed as, hey, Tom, you're going to be my assistant. Also, I'm about to be out here doing dirt. And Tom is in the sidelines. Hey, I was waiting on Tom to do something dirty. I was waiting on time to be like jealous and try to, you know, derail something. And he did it. He stayed true to the cause and true to Byard Rustin. And so I thought, for me, this was a very interesting layer of the film. Mari, what did you think about Tom as a former fellow Howard alumni?
Yeah, you know, Tom was there to give just enough nuance, but not be the focal point. And that's honestly what I really appreciated and really took away from the film. It's because it can get to a point where some of these films can, like, they have their protagonists be like through the eyes of a white person type thing. I'm trying to think of the name of that film that came out after Selma a minute ago, but
yeah, we get a lot of white savior movies, you know, where where the guy shows up at the end of the Black Panther in the spaceship and starts shooting everybody like, oh yeah, thanks.
Yeah, exactly. We didn't necessarily get a lot of Tom's point of view outside of Byard. And so I'm fine with that. Like, I'm completely fine with that. I felt like he played his part correctly. I felt like I completely understood what he meant to the movement and what the movement meant to him. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was above the pettiness. He really wanted this thing to succeed. So I did appreciate that aspect and what he contributed to the movie.
Yeah. And this is Gus Halper, who I don't know this man. Are y'all familiar with Gus and his work?
No.
So.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think this movie, for it to be an Oscar nominated film and specifically a Netflix film, is really doing a good job in like highlighting some people that we might not have seen before and that we probably need to get into. Again, Gus Halper, no Wikipedia page. So I think a relative new.
And actress, a lot of these people are like Broadway actors as well. Like, mm-hmm.
which is really interesting.
Which is amazing. The woman who mm-hmm. played Elias's wife, Adrienne Warren, is a Tony Award winning performer. It's like really great to see that. And this is like how the British have been doing it since time immemorial, right? Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't mm-hmm. matter what your medium is, you're an actor. And right. so, you know, seeing all of these great Broadway people start to infiltrate their way into Hollywood is really great. Like, I think for us, for the moviegoers and for mm-hmm. the viewers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it gives a whole different level of, you know, of nuance to some of these roles, you know, like, because screen actors are taught to act in a certain way. Broadway actors learn how to act in a different way. And I do think that meshing these two styles is probably better for everybody. But, you know, it's starting to seep into the larger, media as it seems. And I like it. You know, I'm not complaining about any of these roles. It's been fun watching these characters and these new actors that I've never seen before kind of develop on screen. But we do have to talk about one of our more seasoned actors here, LaTanya. Yeah, we put it off as long as we could. We have, in control of the NAACP here, Roy Wilkins, portrayed by your fave, Chris Rock. Now, LaTanya, I'm going to just let you have the floor. Tell us about your fave. Tell us about your guy, because I know you're an OG Chris Rock fan.
Why? Why are you doing this?
Yeah, I know. Because he's a troll. That's why.
Yeah, like when Chris Rock came on the screen, I literally said, "Damn, I forgot he was in this movie." I mean, he's playing a troll, like Mari said.
She was talking about me.
No, yeah, I was talking about, yeah.
Well, he's also playing a troll. Like, he's maybe been typecast. I couldn't speak to that. I did not cast him. But I mean, he is effective in making me dislike his character and making me question the NAACP. I mean, this is not the first movie that we've covered in recent history where the NAACP has played like a large role. When you go back to the original Color Purple, the NAACP mm-hmm. were like telling people not to see that movie. So the NAACP is a bit of a difficult discussion because there are so many great things that the NAACP has done for the advancement of colored people. Still, mm-hmm. that's the title of the organization in 2024. But there's also so many things that they like, they're a very conservative organization in a lot of ways as well.
Yeah.
So
Roy Wilkins, my other frat brother.
Win some, you lose some.
You, hey, you can't stop fighting. Y'all are anyway. So right. Chris Rock, I will say this. Chris Rock has range. You know, we know Chris Rock as a comedian. We've seen him in a lot of goofy roles, but here he was in a very specific, almost conservative role in this film as Roy Wilkins. Like, so as we know, these are liberal people because they are looking for equal rights for Black people. But sometimes when the NAACP is concerned, it be looking for equal rights for Black men. And then everybody else can get it after. And I think that we've seen that in the conversations about The Color Purple and then in our dealings with Chris Rock's character, Roy Wilkins, in this film as well, because he's basically kind of pushing Bayard Rustin to the side and being like, you know what? He gay. He can't be the face of this. I'm sorry. And then also really undermining what the things that he wants to do by saying, you know, it can't be that big. It can't be 2 days. It can't do this. You can't do that. So a lot of him shutting it down and saying, well, this is the NAACP. We're in charge here. You don't get to make the decisions here. And it does give you a good, good hate into Roy Wilkins' character. It does. Whether you like Chris Rock or not. Mari, what did you think about Chris Rock in this role? Another Chris, one of your faves.
Yeah, like to be completely honest, he sounded like Chris Rock. Like, is Chris Rock with a bad wig on? So to me, it was just like, okay, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I Chris Rock is not the best dramatic TV actor to me. Like, he's just not. I think the closest he got was Spiral, and that's saying something because that was an awful movie, but at least I thought he had a decent acting job there. I don't know if it was his acting was bad, or is he, I think he was just getting out acted by everybody around him. I think that's what really truly happened. I think he was getting completely out acted by every single person around him, to the point where I was just like, it just felt, it kind of sounded like meow, meow, every time he was on screen to me.
I was impressed with Chris Rock just because I know Chris Rock as the Everybody Hates Chris guy. I know him as his stand-up specials. Like, I haven't really seen him in a lot of dramatic roles. So to see him in this role, I was very proud of Chris Rock and his acting ability, because he is surrounded by some crazy good actors with CCH Powder and Coleman Domingo. Like, these people are seasoned professionals, but he's also surrounded by some relative newcomers. And it didn't feel like he wasn't like the weakest link. And I think he had a very big role to play as well, you know, to be the face of the opposition from within, you know, in the same way that Jeffrey Wright's character was the opposition from within. I think it takes a lot to go there. I do think that there might be aspects of Chris Rock's personality to where it wasn't that much of a stretch, but at the same time, I think that he held his own. So I was very proud to see him there. The movie ends with Bayard Rustin actually kind of like embodying one of the quotes that he said throughout the film, which is, I want to be a part of the movie. I don't care if you call me the garbage man. You can call me the garbage man and I'll be a part of this, but I need to make this happen. And so he ends up taking a role as the deputy lead of this movement, of this March on Washington. And then later on, by the time it's all said and done, when it's time for them to go into the room and everybody is going to talk about how great everyone is, he's the one who's still picking up trash with the rest of the grassroots people and the organizers and the people on the floor of this whole movement. And it probably says a lot, right? Because again, all of this work to get very minimal credit, largely due to his sexuality and who he is as a person and not what his character is, you know, throughout the film, and the amount of the hard work that he did. And so at the end of this, I felt like it was a story of triumph because we know where this leads, but also a very sad story to me, because he doesn't get the credit that he's due. And then we know that the civil rights movement does not end at that point for Black people or for gay people. And then largely gay people still have a long way to come when it comes to getting their recognition in these roles. And, you know, and I mean roles within civil rights movements, but roles in every other aspect of life, including acting. And so, yeah, I thought that, you know, Coleman Domingo just now getting a nomination for an award this big I thought this was very telling and kind of significant, just to show that, yeah, you can do all of these things and still not get what is deserved to you because there are people in power that won't allow you to have that spotlight. Latanya, I saw you make a reaction to that. You, as our Oscar guru here, I do want to just give you a chance to talk about, you know, some of the underrepresented like populations and the conversation that Mark was talking about earlier, where people are missing the intersection of these people and not really highlighting that we are more than just our color, the color of our skin, but we all have to deal with all portions of us when highlighting these award winners and when giving people their time to shine.
Yeah. I mean, the Oscars are nothing if not a flawed organization. They are a Mojo Dojo Casa House. So like, I was shocked when I saw these nominations. Honestly, when I saw nominations for American Fiction, I was like, really?
Oh, right.
Okay. Sure.
The bar is when, so low for them.
When I know. When I saw that Colman Domingo got nominated, I was like, great. It's about time. But also, oh, whoa. Like, congratulations to the Obamas, because this is their production company, Higher Ground. And you know that they've been doing a lot of lobbying behind the scenes in order to make a something like that happen. I mean, we talk about like Oscar snubs. I know that a lot of people were expecting Lenny Kravitz to get a nomination for the song. For best song. After I heard the song, I no longer expected that.
Same. I was like, oh, okay.
I was today years old when I thought somebody was trying to nominate that for an Oscar, but okay. I was like,
it was definitely submitted. It was up for like Oscar consideration.
Interesting.
You go, Lenny.
Yeah. So I wouldn't call it a snub. I would just call it something that didn't happen. But yeah, in the larger context of the Oscars, I mean, it's difficult to say that like this is the most diverse like pool ever when there's never been diversity amongst the people that are the nominating committee for the Academy Awards, you know, the higher ups in the Academy Awards. A large member of the Academy Award body is white cis males.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of times people listen to their kids. Like, that's when their own, like, kids come in and tell them things and start lobbying. A lot of times it has to come from the production companies themselves. So the people behind Rustin, the people behind American Fiction, had to have done some really impressive lobbying in order for them to get these Academy Award nominations. Now, will they win? I really don't think so. Like, I think that people kind of have their minds made up already about these categories based on the rest of how award season has been going. And
it's tell us, because I'm not impressed.
I feel like there's a lot of momentum for Oppenheimer right now. Murphy being nominated against Colman Domingo is going to be something that's kind of a big deal for him to overcome. I believe that like the Colman Domingo Jeffrey Wright nominations are going to cross each other out in a weird way.
That's odd, but yeah, I agree.
Doesn't it's make any damn sense, but that's just like how the Academy thinks of things. And then like we're talking about like say Sterling K. Brown for best supporting actor. I think that he should win, but I also know that Robert Downey Jr. is nominated in that category. Mark Ruffalo is nominated for Oppenheimer. Mark Ruffalo is nominated in that category for Poor Things. Those are like you know, kind of Avengers. Like, yeah, exactly. And then we've got Ryan Gosling nominated for, rightfully so, for playing Ken. Like, he was a standout in that movie about women. Like, he just must be said. So, yeah, there's a lot of, like, politics going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of performances that we think should be nominated. Like, why not Tiana Taylor for 1001? You know, like, why not anyone for Past Lives? It got nominated for a Best Picture, but no one got nominated for any, not acting, not directing. Like, what did you like the film?
Right. Best Picture, but we didn't like none of the stuff y'all did. We just liked the whole presentation.
Yeah.
The whole package.
So even though I'm like a bit of an Oscars junkie, I'm not as much of a snob as the Oscars are at all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Mari, as we wrap up, for the people who watch this film, I'm sure that they, you know, they have listened to this and they thought, okay, yeah, we talked about the plot or whatever. But if people didn't watch this, right, if they just came here to get the rundown, what do I need to know about Rustin? How do you feel about this movie and like where it stacks up in the biopics that we have? Because as Black people, we love a good biopic. We got The Temptations. We got What Got to Do With It. Little Richard got a biopic. Michael Jackson got a few of them. Where do you think Rustin stacks up in that conversation?
I mean, I feel like it does stack up high against the biopics that include civil rights leaders. You know, it's hard to come up against those musical ones, to be quite honest. Like, because it's just so good to see the musical ones. But like, I would definitely kind of put this up there with like the original Malcolm X with Denzel.
Ooh, and, okay, yeah.
Wow.
The original, like, Martin Luther King one. I can't remember which one I'm talking about. There's been so many. But at least one of them.
And there's about to be another with Genius, a TV show that's coming out to portray both Malcolm X and Martin Luther King.
Oh, ooh, great. Okay. Well, the one that I'm assuming the people who did Aretha and had... what's your name? Yeah. Okay. So I actually like this one. I think it's because it's a story that's not well known. I can't say that I knew this story going into it. I thought it was well acted. Again, like even if you might find the history portion of it boring, I think Coleman Domingo's portrayal of Bayard is what really keeps you engaged, like truly, truly, truly. Like it could be like womp womp womp, history, what are we doing over here? But it's like his reactions to everything that's going on is what kept pulling me back every single time. So I actually rank it very, very highly. I even like the opening where we get like a montage of the civil rights thing, where we opening with like the lunch counter protests, Ruby Bridges being escorted, and like the Little Rock Nine and all of that. Like that montage was like beautifully sad.
That shot in the sunglasses was just gorgeous.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about that montage is that it was in color. You know,
yeah,
I think that a lot of time we are shown those pictures in black and white, and it makes it feel like it was forever ago.
Yes.
But you know, we know that it has not been that long, and the events of this like are still within people's lifetime, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I agree. I think this is a very important biopic. I think that it will shine light on other civil rights leaders as well. You know, when I was growing up, it was like, all right, kids, give us your best MLK speech or give us your best MLK essay. You know, we were all writing about Martin Luther King. And then like, oh yeah, you get a few like people like Stray and you go, oh yeah, I'm gonna write about Harriet Tubman. You're like, oh, okay, cool.
I won a like $50 college like savings bond, like the bond for doing Martin Luther King like in cutout a kid. I was like maybe all of eight, and that it looked like Mr. Potato Head. It truly, I won third place, which meant I got $50
for you,
and that sat in my account for college and all of that, and garnered money. like it's just so limited, like how many civil rights leaders were like kids are actually taught, and even more now. Today's date, like they're trying to restrict it even more when we're already down to the bare bones of MLK and Malcolm X, if you're lucky, Rosa Parks, if you're lucky, you know what I'm saying? Like these are important. It is truly important. So you should always go watch it. Also, random side note, it took me until maybe like a decade ago to realize like I lived in DC as a child. And my dad attended the Million Man March. It took me forever to realize, that it was different from the March on Washington.
You're like, and they were both technically marches on Washington.
Yes.
I have so many questions about the Million Man March, but that is a time, a conversation for another time. Thank you all for listening and joining us here as we wrap up yet another Academy Award nominated film and that centers a Black character and a Black actor. And so this has been fun. LaTanya, can you tell everybody where they can find you, what you've been up to, what's going on? Tell us what's been going down. And shout out to the new hair, though. Shout out to the new hair.
Thank you, Chappelle. It just filled my cold heart. If you want to hear more of my prognosticating about the Oscars, you can do so by listening to the podcast that me, Grace, and Ariel put out about the Oscar nominations. It was funny because the Oscar nominations are funny in a lot of ways. And then you can catch me on Versus with Mike Bloom talking about season one of True Detective and season four, the current True Detective, True Detective Night Country. I have seen tonight's episode already and the end is amazing. I can't wait for people to see it. I love what Issa Lopez has done, and everything is so scary about this season, and it makes me really happy as a horror fan. So check that out. You can follow me on Twitter at LK Starks for more.
All right. And Mari, what have you been up to? This is a big week for wrestling.
Yes. We just finished going live and posting our Rumble, our Royal Rumble Reactions podcast. So me and Matt Scott were joined by Torian, a former guest, a recurring guest, should I say. There we go. To talk about our reactions from last night's Royal Rumble. And it was a lot. So go and check that out by going to robhasapodcast.com/wrestlingfeed in order to subscribe. You can also follow me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much. That's two, like the number two. And also, every Tuesday, me and Sarah Carradine bring True Crime Tuesdays to RJP on the Crime Scene podcast. So you can go to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed in order to subscribe to us there. We are on a break this week. Things are happening. There's a break at some point, but there's a really good episode, American Nightmare, featuring Jason Reed coming up. So just make sure you're subscribed so you know when we come back. We take 1 week break sometimes and it happens. So just go subscribe. That's it.
Yeah, you work so hard over on Crime, so you definitely deserve a break whenever you can get one. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Chappelle's_show to keep up with all the things that I am doing, including Rob and I just wrapped up coverage of The Trust on Netflix, where we interviewed Mama J, one of the standout characters from that cast. So if you are a fan of The Trust or are you getting into it, check out that interview. It was a good time. Also on suitspodcast.com, Rob and I are still covering Pearson, the Suits spinoff. And so you can check us out on suitspodcast.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast to Suit Yourself to get all of Rob and I's coverage of Suits and now Pearson and more. You can join our Facebook community too, suitspodcast.com/Facebook. And then also, speaking of Rob, he and I are working on something special for the Rob Has a Podcast Network coming very, very soon in February. And so keep up with me on Twitter at Chappelle's_show, follow at Rob Has a Podcast, and look for more details about what's coming up next for me. But for LaTanya at LK Starks, Mari at Mari Talk Too Much, and me, Chappelle, at Chappelle's_show. We will talk to you all next time. Bye.